10:30, 91, Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
10:35 a.m. You got coffee, right?
Mm-hmm. Belgian hazelnut coffee. It's in a blue cup.
Belgian?
Oh, that's later.
Belgian hazelnut. No, thank you.
Blue butterflies on the cup.
Great clean tape here.
Yeah, tape is cheap. But Arlene's time isn't, right? Well, I don't know about that personally. Anyway, okay, we're going to digress a little bit to give some, just one practical example. We've so far delineated a lot of the theoretical arrangement of things and why they are where they are, but we really have not discussed the dynamics of how to move through them or use them. We've talked about fixed and floating, but we have not really illustrated how to apply those, and in a moment we will. But just to get our feet wet on that subject, we're going to give a practical example, very, very simple one from JAWS. We're going to look at the make determinations step by step about Chief Brody in JAWS, which set is fixed, the mental or the physical, and the one that's fixed, where he is at. And just take two of the white cloths, one of them in terms of his attitude and internally his motivation, and one of them in terms of his physical actions, and see how he rotates through those in the fixed set and where he is lodged in them rotates through the floating set and where he's lodged in them in the fixed set. First of all, which set is fixed, the mindset or the physical?
Mind.
Mindset is fixed. Why is the mindset fixed? How do we reach that determination? Okay. We look at what the two problems are. Again, there are two problems. Each problem is only visible looking at one set from the other because the actual nature is it's just two incompatible sets, the mindset and the physical. They do not match, and a dilemma exists. When you stand on one, you see a problem in the other. You don't see the problem where you're standing. So essentially, we're looking at what is the nature of the problem. And in the mindset, it's his fear of water. Essentially, he does not... too many essentials here. Strike one essentially. Anyway, he looks...
three more.
Put a macro on essentially. Anyway, he's looking at the problem of his own fear of the water, which is completely a mind problem, has no existence in the physical world other than his fear of something physical, but it is the mental problem. And then there is the physical problem, which is obviously the shark, having to deal with the shark. Dealing with the shark is the problem. Whatever happens in terms of dealing with the shark, dealing with his fear. And that's a good way to categorize problems also, is by looking at them as dealing with this and dealing with that. That says neither it's good nor bad, that something has to be eliminated or added to. It merely says you have to deal with it. And in the frozen set, the fixed set, you will not be dealing with it. That's the one that must change. So, we look at him all the way through the story, and anyone who's seen JAWS knows that he really does not come to grips with his fear of the water until the very end, when he's facing the shark alone on the sinking boat.
He is considering his fear the entire time,
But
always considering it, and it's until he stops considering that is he been able to do something about it.
Right. So, essentially, he never really makes a change in his fear or addresses his fear as now I'm going to alter my fear or stick with it.
Or alter my approach to dealing with the fear.
He's not made any decisions.
That is the fixed set.
Right. Now, in terms of the physical problem, when you look at it, he is altering his approach to that all the time. He goes everywhere from trying to put up signs to hiring a boat to facing it off himself. He's involved in many different approaches. He kowtows to the mayor for a while, and so he's obviously very mobile in dealing with his approach with the shark. Now, when we look at the two quads of white that we're going to be dealing with, we're going to deal first with the commitment self-interest quad of pursuit, support, oppose, and avoid. And then we're also going to be looking at the action quad, the need quad of proaction, preservation, reaction, and inaction. We'll be looking, because we're talking about it being a fixed mindset, let's look at that first. In terms of dealing with his fear of water, he avoids dealing with it. He avoids confronting it all the way through. Every time that he is dragged kicking and screaming into conflict with his fear of water, it's not because he was either pursuing it or supporting it. And it's not because he's opposing his fear of water, it's because he's avoiding dealing with it. And so he's locked into a void all the way through until the very end with the fear of water, where he's avoiding considering it, essentially. He's got it, he knows he has it, he admits he has it, but he avoids thinking about it, avoids dealing with it. However, in terms of the physical problem of the shark, he starts out in a void because rather than dealing with the shark, he puts up signs and tells people to stay off the beach. That's his approach, which is an avoidance of the problem, not opposing it, supporting it, or pursuing it.
As long as people stay out of the water, there is no problem.
Then he moves in Act 2 into opposing it. Now, this may seem very strange, as we know he's the one who's going after the shark ultimately and who moves the action towards the shark, but he is opposing it at the moment that they go into the town meeting, the council meeting, and the mayor stands up and says, we're only going to have the beaches closed for 3 days or whatever it is. Then at that point, he says, I never agreed to that, but he does nothing about that. And apparently, as either a member of the council or as someone who has to carry out the will of the council, he goes on record as being opposed to doing anything about the shark problem because the mayor has just said, now we're just going to let 3 days pass and then we're going to open up the beaches again and we don't have a problem anymore. We're not going to deal with the problem.
Well, and no, they're going to have all sorts of people go out and try to get the shark. They're going to have an open
season. They put up an award on it. They put up an award on it.
Reward.
But they do not deal with the shark problem directly. They're opposed to dealing with it themselves.
No, this is not them. This is him. He is opposed to dealing with the shark directly. That is what they are not opposed to it. They're absolutely for it. They're trying to get rid of it.
That's true, too.
He is opposed at that point. He's not avoiding the shark problem. It's because he first starts out and says, okay, let's stay out of the water. As long as everybody stays out of the water, there's no problem. Unfortunately, people won't stay out of the water. So then the council proposes that everybody go into the water, go and get in their boats, and go out and track down the shark. And he's absolutely opposed to that.
And you'll notice also in the scenes when all the people are hanging all over the boats and going out on the water, it's under the guise of him looking out for the safety of the public, but he's essentially trying to stop people from going out there. He's stopping them from going out with guns. He's stopping them from going out with dynamite. He's stopping them from going out every chance he gets. He's essentially opposed to that effort to go after the shark. And it puts him in a very clear physical perspective at that point of opposing dealing with the shark problem. At that time, he's not really got any plans of his own. He's not making any efforts to go after it. And he is opposing the effort to go after the shark. When he sends for Hooper at that point, and Hooper arrives, it's more, I suppose, that he expects to be told that the shark is going to go away eventually at that point in his mind. He just wants the problem to vanish, but he wants to be convinced. So again, in terms of dealing with the shark, he's remaining opposed with it. Once his son is jeopardized by the shark, and he goes over to the mayor in the hospital and forces him to sign the agreement hiring Quint, at that point he is supporting the effort to deal with the shark. And suddenly now he has someone who he is saying, yeah, go out and get that shark, and I'm behind you. As a matter of fact, he goes off on the boat himself along with him, never intending to personally do anything about that problem other than to support the effort. And that's exactly what he does through Act 3. The final physical state, or state in regard to the physical problem for Brody, is when everybody else is gone and he's been backed up against a wall, and now he has a choice of just laying there and getting eaten by the shark or going after it, pursuing dealing with the shark problem himself. He's been forced by circumstance to have to move into pursuit or die, essentially. And that's really his only two choices. Interestingly enough, everyone else has been shown to pursue it and fail. It comes down to him as the one who must pursue in order to succeed, who has the only opportunity left of succeeding. And that's one of the aspects of the primary character that we'll see that defines the primary character is, other than the fact that he's completely developed in terms of his internal mindset, the only thing that really defines him, ultimately, since everyone has a fixed aspect in their mindset, every character does in this case, the only thing that defines him is that when all else has been tried, he is the last one there. There's nobody else to do it except him. And simply the order of telling the story so that he is the one that remains defines him retrospectively as the primary character. Now, we get a lot of clues to that by the number of scenes he has, how well developed he is compared to other people, by how many camera angles focus on him, how many things are seen from his point of view. But those are all storytelling devices. Structurally, the only thing that really locks in the fact that he is indeed the primary character is the fact that he is the last one to take a stab at solving the problem. So now we've shown that he's been a void all the way along in terms of his fear. And he's moved from a void to opposed to support to finally pursuit in terms of the shark problem, dealing with the shark problem. Similarly, Kirsten, do you want to do the action one?
Yeah, the action is a little bit different than we were just talking
about.
Okay,
good.
The action, let's see, not in terms of, I can't really think of it in terms of the mat hole.
No.
Because this is not a mat. Well, there's probably one. It's probably an action, but let's see. No, it's definitely preservation.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where it starts out.
So they'll hide in preservation as far as the fear of water. And
right.
Right.
Okay. That also happens to be like over in the self-interest commitment quad where we have a void. He also is in the same thing. He starts out of preservation in the first act. He is trying to keep things the same way that they are. When things are adjusted one direction or another, he tries to put them exactly back the way they were. He does not try to go beyond that. He does not try to do less than that. He just tries to make things as if things had never even happened. Then in the second act, the same act where he changes from avoid to oppose, he then goes into inaction. In other words, he at that point does nothing. He stands around and he's watching everybody do everything, but he's offering neither help nor hindrance. He is just fairly, at that point, completely ineffectual. Even to the point when they're on the beach and there's the shark attack, he's just sitting there. He can't do anything. He runs up to the water. He can't even pull people out of the water because he won't step into the water. But once he can't do anything to help his son. Everybody else brings the son up. He's just completely ineffective and does really not do anything at that point.
Just to mention that when Chris is talking about being ineffectual, we're doing that from the basis of being inactive. So again, looking at the action quad, he is in inaction in that entire act.
Right. He is not doing anything to further or hinder the progress of the problem. As soon as he moves into Act 3, however, he goes into reaction, which is it's different than preservation in that when something happens, he then attacks the source. For instance, when Quint destroys the radio, he then goes after Quint. He starts yelling and screaming and jumping up and down and might say overreacting, but he's definitely reacting to what Quint's doing as opposed to trying to put the radio back together, which is what, if he was in preservation, he would have tried to do in preservation. If he was in action, he would do nothing. If he was in proaction, he would try to devise another way to contact the land. But what does he do? He's in reaction, and he just completely reacts and goes back at the source of whatever seems to have attacked him. Likewise, when he's given the job of chumming, he's mumbling and sort of grumbling at Hooper and Quint. Again, he's reacting to the source. Anyway, so then at that point, once everybody else is, in fact, once each person gets eaten, he kind of runs, finally sort of runs around like a chicken with his head cut off and just sort of reacting to whatever happens, not really anticipating or looking ahead at all. The very last act, which is, again, a very short part, he ends up taking pro-action. He ends up, he reactively throws the air tank into the shark's mouth, but then at that point when the shark picks up, he switches. That's the exact point where everything switches. He starts to pursue. He changes from consideration to non-consideration. He's no longer worried about the problem with the water, because right now that's the least of his concerns. And he decides to take pro-action. He is going to go after the shark.
And he gets himself a gun, and he gets himself a spear, and he climbs up on the masthead, and he waits for it so that he can take action against it.
And even to the point where the masthead goes down and goes into the water, goes into the water, which again was his biggest fear, and the shark is coming right at him at 90 knots an hour, he's very calm, and he sits, and he goes after the shark as opposed to, he takes action, he doesn't wait until the shark is going to do something to him and react. So that is how his action quad goes through the four different white elements, and his mental attitude goes from inaction to proaction. And it's only at the last act, that very short fourth act, that he actually does change from a mental attitude of inaction to an attitude of proaction.
Right. So much for Chief Brody.
We may have said this a million times, I'm not sure, but this is really important. When you are looking at the fixed set, you must maintain all of the positional rules of our big chart on the wall. In other words, the rotation, the flipping, and all that stuff is absolutely essential when you're looking at the fixed set. However, when you're looking at the floating set, basically anything goes. You cannot break the elements and put them in other places, but the order in which one explores them is catch as catch can.
I think that's only true for the non-primary characters.
Right, the primary character, absolutely. The primary character must go, is bound by all rules.
Right, speaking of rules, we really haven't iterated them, so we can't reiterate them yet, but I'd like to iterate them now in a very basic sense, without an explanation of why it works that way, or necessarily how to use it, what it means, just to list what these rules are. Whenever we have something arranged in a quad, whether it's made up of one element in each corner of a quad of four elements, or whether we take four elements and look at them in terms of a blue or a yellow, and we have four of those arranged in a quad, or even go up to the highest level where you have 16 white elements in each corner of a large quad that represents mind or universe. Whenever we do that, the rules for moving things are simply that anything that is at one corner of an X can move directly across to the other corner of the X. They can flip, so that if you have something in the upper left-hand corner, it could change places with the items in the lower right-hand corner. Also, the ones in the lower left-hand corner could change places in the upper right-hand corner. Now, once you have flipped those any way that you want, so that you're never changing the ones you're next to and never changing the one you're across from, but merely altering which corner you're sitting in, then once you've made that flipping change, you can turn the dial clockwise or counterclockwise and rotate all of the quads around to one position or another. So if you move the one in the upper right to the upper left going counterclockwise, you'll move the one from the upper left to the lower left, the one from the lower left to the lower right, the one from the lower right moves up to the vacated position in the upper right.
Simply put, you can swap diagonals. And by doing so, you're only changing the position of two elements. However, whenever you rotate all of them in unison.
Now you've got to put it simply, and they're going to be able to understand this.
Oh, sorry. Also, when you're talking about four of anything that's referred to as a quad, when you're referring to a set of quads, four quads, or a quad of quads, we would call that a set. So that if we're talking about the entire set of blues and yellows, blues or yellows, those can be turned like these story sets. I don't know what we call the whole 64, though. We don't really have a name for the set of sets.
The thing on the wall, I think.
It would be a quad of sets, I guess.
A level.
So the level includes a level is a different description, though. A level is the color.
Yeah.
So if you're saying a level, that's like all the whites, which are 64 elements, or the blues, which are all 16, or yellows, which are 16, or greens, which are 4, or pinks, which are 4. Those are the levels. Those are like slices. Whereas if you're talking about a quad, that's a part of a level, and actually quite frequently you can have the quad labels as part of it or not. That's really, they sort of go along with it, the blues and the yellows with the whites, or the greens and pinks with the blues and the yellows.
Right, now when we're looking at the fixed set, again, as we look at a fixed set, then we're saying that this is the way that it is all throughout.
That's
the
way
story.
The audience sees it.
Right. And when we look at that fixed set, then we're not looking at acts. We're just saying this is kind of an arrangement of the potentials that exist in the story that are constant, and those potentials continue to exist throughout the story until they're resolved or not resolved at the end. But when we look within the any quad of 4 items, then we can move through those in the floating set, and each one would represent an act, essentially, and that would be visible in an act. And this works at each one of the levels we move up, so that if you're dealing with, for example, in the quad of 4 elements that has thought, knowledge, ability, and desire on the whites, that you would say that there would be a relationship of one of those being in the upper left-hand corner, which we have marked as the potential area. Anything in the upper left-hand corner at any level will be seen as potential in regard to the other elements of that level. So when you move, when you look up at knowledge being in the upper left-hand corner of a quad of 4 white elements, then knowledge would be resisted if you put ability in the upper right. It's resisted by ability. Then if you're forming a Z pattern, which is the way we read these, you go from upper left to upper right to lower left to lower right. And the order is potential, resistance, current, and outcome. So if you have knowledge, then ability, desire, and thought, you would have knowledge is the potential, resisted by ability, through a process or current of desire, leads to an outcome of thought.
Now, when you look at them as potential, current, resistance, outcome, you are not looking at them in terms of acts. You're looking at them in terms of the overall relationship of those elements together.
Right. So that if you were to take that quad of 4 whites and say, what order does a character move through these? You could not do that at the same time that you're looking at the relationship between or among those elements. Essentially, because of, like we talked about, you stand on one set, the mind or the universe, and you see the problem in the other. When one thing appears to be fixed, where you can see it in terms of potential, resistance, current, and outcome that you're standing on, the other one will appear to have a certain order in the floating set that will be representative of the act order.
The linear order.
The linear order through the acts that you are going through on those elements. Now, when we're talking about whites and blues and yellows and pinks and greens and all the different levels that we're moving through, when you're standing at one level, for example, the blue level, the way these orders are arranged is that the whites are kind of an interface, and they're kind of down the middle. And to one side are the blues, and on the other side of this plane of whites are the yellows. Then you have on the blue side, which we got on the blue side,
That's the TKAD one.
The pinks. Okay, so the TKAD, the pinks will be on the blue side, and the greens will be on the yellow side. So you're moving up. If you start a central position of looking at the plane of white elements, all 64 of them, as a geometric plane, and you turn on its edge, so you're looking at the just edgewise on this plane, and it looks like a line to you, then over to the right of the plane would be, say, for example, the yellows, and over to the left of the plane would be the blues. Then to the right of the yellows would be the greens, and to the left of the blues would be the pinks. So it sort of forms a little accordion.
Then to the right of the greens would be the universe, and to the left of the pinks would be the mind.
Right. So you end up with mind going from the left to right. You end up with mind, then going to pinks, then going to blues, then going to whites, then going to yellows, then going to greens, and then going to universe.
Correct.
Okay. Now, in doing that, whenever you're standing on one of those levels from left to right, if you look at it in terms of being fixed for your perspective as an author, and you say, this is going to be seen in terms of potential resistance, current, and outcome, then the ones to either side of you that you can see from there, on either side, will appear to be floating, and they will appear to have an act order. If you shift yourself just one position to the left or right, so one of the ones that was appearing floating, you're now fixing that as an author and say, now look at this level in terms of potential resistance, current, and outcome, which gives me an idea of the dynamics of what's fighting each other here. Then if you've moved just one position over, suddenly you're on top of one that was floating, now you're fixing it. And the ones on either side of that will appear to be floating, will appear to have an act order, a linear order, including the one you were previously on that was previously fixed. Now that will appear to be mobile. So any level that you're looking at has two ways of reading it. But the problem that you run into frequently trying to use the system is not realizing that when you're fixing one, the ones on either side have to be mobile. And because a minute ago you were fixing those, and you get into trouble in terms of analyzing when you fix one and fix the one next to it, then you're not going to be reading things correctly and you can't use them correctly. So in terms of arranging the material on our wall chart, the way you would use it as an author without getting into specific details is that at each level you would want to arrange a potential resistance, current, and outcome by doing your flipping of levels on the diagonals, by doing your flipping of elements on the diagonals, and then by doing your rotation to place them where you want. And once you have determined that those are going to be the fixed perspective of those at that level, then you're going to want to see how things progress in the act, how that will be revealed. And in doing that, you may have a completely different order of those elements. So then when you put them in upper left, upper right, lower left, lower right, they no longer are in terms of potential resistance, current, outcome, but would be indicative of the linear progression through the story. Now, again, the only character who is essential to exploring the problem between the mindset and the universe set is the primary character. And you can do a one-man play. And when you do that one-man play, all you're doing is having someone talk or act to express where he is in his fixed mindset, and he will cover all the different points he has fixed. And in him, rather than having, for example, a character set that has 16 fixed elements, you would put him in a potential position and in a set of 4, a resistance of 4, a current of 4, and an outcome of 4. So out of that 16, he would be a potential in each of the 4 quads of 4 elements. And he would also have a resistance in each of the 4 quads of 4 elements, a current, and an outcome in each of the 4 quads of 4 elements. And in that manner, you have now established the same characteristics that you would have in a character set that would be represented by different characters, all within one person. But he must, in his explanation or actions, touch on all those points to show where they are. Now, if he's doing it in terms of explanation and they are fixed, then you would probably want him to be acting in a manner that would show him going through a floating set. And in the primary character, you cannot violate the diagonals. You can only flip the diagonals and rotate, but you must stay in that order with that primary character. When you start developing other characters, other physical people in a story to carry some of these characteristics, you're beginning to work in an area called thematics. And the way thematics deals is that if you are, first of all, if you have those characters moving through the floating set, they can take any order that they want, because it's the combination between where they are, the interrelationship between where they are and where the primary character is, that will enhance or diminish